take a deep breath, take the higher road. That's what they always say, as if they know the way. They won't take it from me. But don't ever doubt yourself, it's life ain't just a dream. You make your own, so kick and scream. The people move alike with a never-ending force. You never had the chance, so what you waiting for? The day has come, my friend, cause this is war.
This is April with Nurses Out Loud, and today I have Nurse Jodi O'Malley, our Friday host, with me, and we are going to just do something very different. We are going to play a game, and it's called How Does This End? I came across a Substack from, who was it, Gary Bray, and that was the title of his Substack, and I thought that was such a clever way of just looking at life, because that's something that I've always done. And actually, it's not Gary Bray. His name is Chris Bray. So his Substack is called Tell Me How This Ends. And I thought that's a fun thing to do. So I have Jodi on here today, and we are going to play this game. She does not know what questions I'm going to ask. She's going to just go off the cuff, and we're just going to kind of see how it goes. There's so much to talk about in the news right now, so I think that we will have no shortage of content. So again, this is Nurses Out Loud. We are here Monday through Friday, and our show airs 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and then we have an encore at 11 p.m. You can listen on America Out Loud Talk Radio. There are apps you can go to, or you can wait for the podcast to come out, which is usually 1 to 2 days after recording. So, Jodi?
Okay, let's get
you ready for this game?
No, I like to say my opinion, so I'm excited to see what you're going to ask.
Right. And so, and everybody, this is our opinion. Everyone has an opinion. This is our opinion based on just what we've seen and what our intuition is. We'll both kind of kick around our ideas. So here's my first topic for you. How do you see the U.S. healthcare system ending?
How do I see the U.S. Mm-hmm. hospital healthcare system ending? Mm-hmm. You mean given the
current state of the way things are now, and just kind of this move toward hospital
socialism.
Yeah, basically universal healthcare is their plan is. That's the agenda. So mm-hmm. How do you see that going for us here in America?
I see it being two different types of healthcare. I see the socialist healthcare system being ushered in. Mm-hmm. But I mean, think about it. They got rid of all the dissenting critical thinkers that did not want to violate their ethical principles and the oath that they took to patients with autonomy, informed consent, those types of things. And so now you have a lot of us that have left that system and looking at new, you know, really going back to holistic healing therapies, medicinal healing therapies, getting away from the pharma industrial complex is what I like to call it. Mm-hmm. Lots of people don't realize that physicians or nurse practitioners or anybody that's in that insurance CMS type system, that they don't have a lot of autonomy. There isn't the physician-patient relationship like we once knew it. When I found out that doctors essentially, okay, because here, let me take you back. Mm-hmm. I worked at a socialist healthcare for the Native Americans.
Oh, right.
You know, it's free. Yeah. So it's free government money from the taxpayers. You know, we, the taxpayers, pay for this, and the Native Americans get free healthcare if they come to, you know, the hospital that I worked at. And so I saw how socialist hospital systems run, and basically, you know, the physician, they obtain a diagnosis, and they put that like chief, you know, complaint diagnosis in the computer, and it populates what they can prescribe for it. So there's not really a lot of thinking, you know, or let's just put it this way. Let's just say they put in a diagnosis for something and they have to go in the steps essentially of like, try this first, then you can try this and then this. And then they, the, but they can't go out of order. They have to try those different medications. And if they want to try like number three or number four, they have to provide a rationale of why they chose that.
Yeah.
And that's so
actually, like what we learned from the utilization review nurse that we had interviewed, that they're constantly coming through the chart to see what you're doing. And if you're doing something outside of what their guidelines are, you don't get paid.
Right. Exactly. You don't get paid. I mean, a good example of it would be, say somebody comes into the hospital, and this is in a public hospital. And I remember this case fairly well. And the person came in with intractable nausea and vomiting. They just could not stop vomiting. And so the first thing we do is give them Zofran. Then the next thing would be, what's the med called? Not Phentermine. Phenergan, right? Phenergan.
Phenergan.
And yep. And then they'd give them Phenergan. Now that didn't work. And they tried that for days. And this poor patient just kept vomiting. Finally, the provider ordered, I want to say it was called Marinol, but it was essentially marijuana in a pill. And that helped. And I, you know, when we had another patient together, the GI doc and myself, I said, well, let's try that one first. I mean, the side effects are a lot less than the other two. So why aren't we just, you know, using that? And he's like, no, we have to go in order. And I thought, well, isn't that a waste of the patient's time and money and insurance money? So that makes you just wonder, like, how much are they getting paid by these pharmaceutical companies that make these drugs?
And who's getting paid? Because it's not the doctors.
Right. Right. It's not the doctor. I don't know.
It's got to be the pharmaceutical companies who are somehow in alignment with the insurance companies. Like, they must be just kind of recycling money between the two companies, or between those industries, because they really have cut out the provider in a lot of the reimbursement. They put so many laws in place to prevent physicians, which is, I mean, it's in some ways it's a good thing, because you don't want what's currently happening right now with the whole, you know, vaccines and COVID treatments and how people are getting kickbacks for doing things like that, because then you can't trust that they're making proper decisions on the patient's behalf. But at the same time, when you cut them out of these opportunities to make money, and then you keep cutting and slashing their salaries, well, patient care suffers.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know in healthcare, it's the hospital administrators that make the most money.
Right.
And then you have the supervisors, you know, or the nurse managers on the floor. So it's a nurse man. It's the CNO, chief nursing officer. And then you have the nurse managers on the unit. And then you have the supervisors. But the nurse managers, those in the administrative realm, if you will, they're the ones who get bonus payouts. They get bonuses at the end of the year. So, yeah, it's all money driven, April. We know that. And right. I see that COVID came in and, you know, they eliminated, their experienced workforce, essentially, and let them leave. And I think it's all to have a socialist healthcare system.
But then what happens? Like, what happens? How does that affect? So I was listening to someone from the UK, and they were talking about how there was this doctor who sent out a tweet, and he was talking about how he had just finished his shift. He had worked a night shift in the emergency room, and that was the first time he actually sat in his car and cried in all of his career. And he had been doing it, I think, for like 9 years, because it was so bad. They didn't have room for patients. There had been patients waiting in the ER for 40 hours. They couldn't see the patients. He was trying to help clean up a patient with the only one, there was like one nurse in the ER that was working with him. So it was the two of them trying to change a patient who was in a bed in a hall in front of all these other people. And just like the stress of it all, like, was overwhelming. And this is universal healthcare. Like, they have the, you know, they pay taxes so that everyone has access to healthcare. And I've heard many accounts of providers who are saying that people are dying because they're dying in the waiting room because they don't have enough staff to handle the amount of patients that are coming in. So then what happens? How does that end when you, right? For instance, right now we have open borders where we are allowing people to come in who are not citizens, and we're also funding their healthcare. So they're going into hospitals and they're getting treatment, and sometimes they're getting treatment ahead of the American citizens, and that's what they've been told to do, the hospital staff. And so, of course, I'm sure they're getting some sort of compensation for that. That's how you encourage behavior changes in healthcare. So, you know, how does this play out in America when you have limited access because there's not enough providers and there's not enough resources? Do people just start dying at home?
Yeah.
Stop getting,
they do. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And those that have money, so Canada, I'll use Canada as for an example. Mm-hmm. When I moved from Chicago out to Arizona, I realized that we had a lot of Canadians that would come here in our winter months because it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And they would get their health care from America, from in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And why they did that is because their wait list for getting any surgery or going in and seeing a specialist was so long that they opted to come to America or Arizona for their health care.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Medical tourism is a pretty big industry. People come from all over the world. They'll come to America to get health care for the same reason. But what happens if we run out of beds and we run out of providers and we can't get access to the medications due to shortages? Let's say, for instance, the war finally does get started, like boots on the ground here in the States, and we get cut off from our medications that are produced in other countries like China or India. Mm-hmm. How do people take care of themselves?
And then that's where I think we're going back to the holistic medicinal plant based, natural medicine. Mm-hmm. For example, it was like for coughing or no, was it cough? No, congestion. Mm-hmm. Somebody had saw a TikTok and they said, you take an onion, you put it in a mason jar, fill it up with water, close it up. And in 24 hours, you can, take a couple tablespoons of it and it helps to clear up congestion. And I said, what? So I did that and it worked. Like, it literally worked. So that's where I think, and that's where my head's going. And I know yours is as well. We're looking to say, okay, well, what kind of plant do we use to stop a bleed?
Right.
If we need, those types of things.
And so I actually made my own toothpaste yesterday or day before yesterday. Because, I've been looking at labels now and I keep seeing titanium dioxide and everything. So I stopped using the toothpaste. So I had to make my own. And it's actually good. My teeth feel cleaner. Everything is like, I don't know, maybe it's just in my head, but it really does feel. And I use baking soda as a part of the recipe.
And yeah, what was the recipe?
So I used baking soda. I put in coconut oil, some peppermint extract, and some agave. And then I put some honey in it. See, now this is, because I'm thinking of like antimicrobial, antibacterial properties. And also baking soda is salty. So you have to sweeten it, which I learned this from watching a video because I didn't realize that they were putting sweeteners in toothpaste.
Okay.
And that's why it tastes
either.
Great. Yeah. So I'm like, because so at first I was like, I can't put this stuff in toothpaste. That defeats the purpose. But no, actually, that's what we use now. I think they probably use artificial sweeteners in normal toothpaste. But yeah, I use the honey. I use my, and I really was just eyeballing it. So I really need to like do some measurements to figure it out. But I've been using it for the past couple of days, every morning, every night, and it's working.
Say, I love that. And as you're sitting or talking, I'm thinking, I have all those ingredients right now in my house.
Well, that's what I did. I just looked in my cabinet, like, what do I have here? What can I use? And it's working. And it's cheaper. Okay. Oh my gosh. Okay. So since everything is getting so expensive, I was telling my husband, because he's still using the regular toothpaste. I'm like, look, we're about to save so much money. I'm going to learn how to make soap. If I can learn how to make shampoo, like all of those things that we spend a lot of money. Because right now, to buy a thing of body wash is like $10.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I moved my products to Patriot Switch. But I'm sitting here thinking like, okay, I could get on board with this.
And it's so fast. It really didn't take long. I mean, it was really quick. I just threw some things together and mixed it up. And so we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. But so my thinking, I'm thinking about the U.S. healthcare system, and I'm thinking about this, the collapse, the inevitable collapse. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, does there come a point where we can have this, what is it, like a parallel system?
System, yep.
Where we can have, you know, doctors, nurses, healthcare providers who think more like we do, and without the regulations of the government. Like, if we don't have the regulations of the government, we can practice. But if we don't have the regulations of the government, do people become rogue and start doing things that are not safe? I mean, it's the, you know, some of the things that I think about, like, how can we do this? Because how do we start a whole nother system if the cost of entry, the barrier to entry is the cost, right? Mm-hmm. Where you've got to have all of these regulations in place. Like, that will stop the show for a lot of startups, because you just can't even afford all of to maintain or to do all of the regulations necessary, to do all of the protocols, do all the things that go into being a part of a bureaucracy.
Yeah, I know that there are PMAs, private medical associations, that are forming all over, and you don't have to be licensed to do it. Mm-hmm. And here's the benefit of that, is because the person has to enter into the agreement, and it gets taken out of the system. So licensure and all of that doesn't even apply, because it's an agreement that you have with the customer, patient, whatever you want to call them, that you have a one-on-one agreement with.
Say you were like, you had a PMA and you wanted to do something like midwifery.
Mm-hmm.
That means that patient enters into an agreement with you, whether you're trained to be a midwife or not. If they're in agreement, then if anything happens, they don't come back and sue you. Is that what that is?
Correct. Okay. Correct. And it's good, because we have all of these alternative modalities that, you know, sound healing, if you will, mm-hmm. all these different, you know, types of alternative therapy that they can't practice because, you know, they're in the system. And I think, you know, having this come about, if you will, is a good thing, because, you know, I know people that have been practicing different types of therapies for years. Let's just even say massage. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been doing it on their own with their private customers. But if one of those customers wanted to complain, they could get in trouble if they're in the system. But if they have this PMA agreement, then they couldn't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there like that. And I think we need to stop trying to keep people safe, quote unquote, because mm-hmm. it's our government and these three letter agencies that are saying, oh, it's, you know, for safety reasons. And we are an oversight body. And we know now that they're so corrupt. Yeah. I mean, any organization that is going out and saying that these vaccines, for example, are safe and effective and that we need them are corrupt.
Right.
Period.
For sure.
They're corrupt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 100%. Like, avoid them. I avoid them. I actually don't even, so bad. I don't even feel comfortable like going to the doctor anymore. So I've just been trying to figure it out. winging it. But have you ever heard of Dr. Brzezinski? He is a
No, I don't
cancer
think
doctor.
so.
So he's been treating cancer patients. He's a doctor in Houston, and he's been treating cancer patients for it's been a long time, 40 years or yeah, 40 years at least. And he came up with this alternative treatment that was actually curing cancer. And the patients that were coming to him were patients who were given terminal diagnosis, like there's nothing we can do for you, you're gonna die. So then the patients found him and they tried his treatment regimen and it was working. Like these patients are still alive to this day. Well, our government found out about what he was doing and he was trying to do trials. He was doing all this research behind it and he was working on getting a trial going because he was trying to, I mean, this was something that he thought would be a huge, opportunity, and pharmaceutical industries would want to buy in and all this. So he was doing the research behind it. And so once they found out about it, they started investigating him. I think they brought about like four different grand jury trials against him. They were trying so hard to get him put in prison, to bankrupt him. The FDA was constantly investigating him. Like it was insane what they did to this man. And the patients were constantly coming and going to the trials and testifying on his behalf and just saying, this isn't right. Like these are patients who you said have no choice. There's no treatment for them. They're going to die. So why are you stopping them from being able to see this doctor? And I mean, patients were coming from the UK, and even the doctors in the UK were trying to say, oh, he's just a quack. And the patients would ask, like, well, why do you say that? And the doctors were, they didn't even know. They had never met him. They had never read his research. They just had heard that,
Right.
this person is. So I'm sitting here thinking about it because my daughter's friend, her dad is dying right now. He has a brain tumor that is really, really rare. It's interesting because the tumor that he has that's so rare, I've heard multiple people have it recently, which is interesting, but there's no treatment for it. So he's already actually now to the point where he's lost his vision. So he's blind. So he
Wow.
probably only has a little bit of time left. Well, he's gone through the treatments, the traditional treatments and routes. He went down to the cancer clinic in Houston. Standard stuff didn't work. So, he's going to die. But this doctor actually has treated patients with this particular tumor. And but the problem is that there's so much pushback. So the insurance companies won't pay. So patients who are seeing this doctor, they have to go through all these different, jump through all these hoops in order to get coverage, if they can get coverage. A lot of them had to do like fundraisers to get their payments, to help other people, so other people could help them pay for it. But it was always the FDA was pushing back, saying, no, you can't do it. No, you can't give patients this medication. They were just limiting. Oh, you can't sell it outside of Texas. You can't send it across state lines, all of this stuff. And it's like, why is our government preventing us from doing something? Like, if we want to do it, why are you telling us, no, we can't?
I know money. It's all money. It's all money and it's all power. It's interesting you said that. I wonder, I'm going to ask if this is the same doctor, but I met my book editor for the first time over the weekend and she was telling me a story with her son, her young son. I think he was like 9 or 10 years old and he had this tumor. And they wanted to do all the toxic therapy, the chemotherapy, radiation, and all of that. And she said, "No, I'm not going to do it." She almost got her child taken away from her, April. And she met a doctor. Sounds like this might be the same guy, but he treated her son, and he's 22 years old now. When he was supposed to be dead.
So many stories. It was such a great documentary, and it's on YouTube, so people can look it up. Brzezinski, Cancer Cure Cover Up, and it's got like over 2 million views already. But yeah, you listen to these patients tell their stories because they're interviewing all these people from all over the world, telling their stories about how, what their doctor said, what their options were, and when they went to him, because his treatment is actually like has minimal side effects.
Right. That's what she was saying.
It might be the same person. It might be.
Yeah. Is he older now, like in his 80s?
Mm-hmm. And you know what's crazy is they went ahead and finally he finally got a patent for his treatment, and the government, the FDA, put themselves on it, and then this other corrupt pharmaceutical company who tried to steal his idea from him, somehow they got on it. So there's like many patents for this particular treatment. You'll have to watch the documentary, but I mean, it just goes to show you the whole point was they wanted to steal the idea, either to squash it because of, we can't cure cancer. Like, that's not an option.
Or right. It makes us too much money.
Right. Exactly. Or, you know, let's, you know, take the idea from him and market it ourselves.
Yep. That's what they do. And oh my gosh, I don't know about you, but it just really pisses me off that I was a part of that system for so long, you know, and I didn't realize how corrupt it was. Mm-hmm. And now I'm, you know, I'm realizing it, you know, it took me a couple of years to really understand, like, wow, this is so evil.
Right. Oh, okay. So on the other side of this break, I want to talk about how evil it is. And you know, it'll be another question about tell me how this ends, because I think that I'm seeing some things happen within the healthcare system that are also happening in the general population in multiple countries. And it's really ratchet. So on the other side of this break, we will talk about that and I'll get your opinion.
It's time and this is what.
Cold and flu season is here. Wouldn't it be great if you had a way to minimize airborne viral threats? Well, now there is, and it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray called Cofix RX. You might even say it's just what the doctor ordered. To reduce your chance of getting hurt, you wear a safety belt when you're driving. To limit sun damage, you wear sunscreen on the beach. Cofix RX is just like that. It's an additional layer of protection. It's sold by thousands of pharmacists and medical doctors nationwide. It's made right here in the USA. Again, it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray. You've heard them talk about it here on the Out Loud Network over and over again. Check out CofixRx.com. That's CofixRx.com for a retailer near you, or use coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off at CofixRx.com.
These days, every time you turn on the news, it seems like there's a new threat to your health. Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top and shoot it down, or mix it in water. Boost your immunity. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
Was Henry Wadsworth Longfellow that said, "Lives of great men all remind us we can make our lives sublime and departing, leave behind us footprints on the sands of time." America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back. So I have this other question for you.
Okay.
Okay. Tell me how this ends. So currently we have been seeing this pretty much open border policy here in the U.S. And it's not just in the U.S. It's in European countries as well. They're having trouble with their borders. And one of the things that we're learning about is this whole sex trafficking, like this huge market, billions and billions of dollars being made off of the sale of humans for sex. Now, how does this end in relationship to the whole sex trafficking industry in society and also within the healthcare system? And I'll give you an example. I had recently was talking to some colleagues and they were talking about how there was a patient in L&D who they knew was a victim of sex trafficking and was pregnant and having a baby. And the man who was trafficking her was at the hospital and they kept getting him kicked out because they didn't feel safe. Like they actually were scared. And he kept getting let back in and they were like, well, we can't keep him out. You know, they didn't have, I guess they just didn't have a reason to ban him from coming to the hospital, even though they would, you know, find him hiding in different spots and he shouldn't have been in places. And they knew that he was abusing this woman. And yet she was afraid, so she wouldn't press charges. So they couldn't do anything. And this is an L&D. Wow. I mean, we just recently, a few months ago, had two staff members killed at one of our L&D units in the Dallas area. So the fact that they're letting this happen, like, okay, you know, this guy is a sex trafficker. You know that she's pregnant because of this situation she's in, but because she's not pressing charges, there's nothing that they can do. And so we're seeing these people come into the hospital, you know, what are we supposed to do? How does this end?
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, because we have to protect the victim, even if the victim is scared. You know, I it reminds me of, you know, like the OJ, right, with his wife. And back in, I think it was in 1992 or 1993, something like that. But I remember calling the cops on an abuse situation for myself. Mm-hmm. And the cops came and they said, oh, well, your mom's here now. Just go home with her and let it die down. After I was like beat up.
Oh my.
And God. they didn't want to press charges or anything. And then, you know, the OJ Simpson happened. And then the laws got stricter and the cops had to take it more seriously, you know? And so, you know, and when he did it again, then he actually got arrested, you know, that time. But, you know, it's an abuse survivor type mentality. You know, you have this trust that you gain with your abuser, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, there's obviously good moments along with many bad moments.
Right.
But that victim mentality, and how do the hospitals handle that? Because then if you did, you know, got rid of the abuser out of there, and now we have to find where is this woman going to go with this brand new baby?
Right.
And, you know, I wish I had more of a educated response for you, but being completely transparent, I did not realize that this was such an issue. Mm-hmm. Until after I blew the whistle and I started talking with different organizations that are trying to help the sex trafficked. And yeah, I know that it, you know, they were trying to get like nursing units, mm-hmm. to where they could identify an abuser and then have a trained nurse come and assess and you know, give them the resources, if you will, of like where to go, where we can take them, how we can get them out of it. But, you know, how does this end? I think Jesus comes back.
I know, right?
There's so much evil, April. It's just so much evil that I had no idea was happening at all.
Same. And that's so, I was watching this documentary, Secrets of the Multi-Billion Dollar Human Trafficking Industry. And it was talking about how women were being kidnapped and taken across country borders and then sold to these camps. They didn't even like, they went over there. Some of them were going over there because they were thought, they thought they were getting work, and they were turned into prostitutes.
Right.
And so I'm like, oh my goodness. So that's happening there. And I remember a few years ago, a friend of mine who's also a nurse, she was, she had met someone and they were doing mission trips to, I think it was some, I can't remember which country it was, but it was a country where there was a lot of, well, they were selling women into this sex industry and there was a lot of abuse. There was a lot, they were getting diseases. They had all kinds of health issues. So they wanted a medical team to come over and just come take care of them, do, you know, just give them clinical care. And they were just saying, this is going to be a really tough one emotionally. So make sure you're prepared. If you want to go, you know, just know you can't save these women. You cannot take them out of the situation they're in. This is their life. You're just coming in there to provide them with healthcare and then just give them hope.
Wow.
And we were really, really considering going, but the thought of it was also like heavy. And this was years ago. This was way before it came out that this is something happening in the United States. But now knowing how many, especially after watching that Project Veritas whistleblower, when she was talking about how HHS is sending children, unaccompanied minors, into these homes full of men who are also non-citizens, and who knows what's happening. They're sex trafficking these children, and we're paying for them at with our tax dollars.
And I think that's right.
It's got to be because when I was watching that documentary, the problem was when they tried to call the police didn't do anything. When they went to court, the judge let the people off. Because they were customers.
Because they were customers. Ah. Oh.
Yes. I never thought of that.
I know. You don't think that, you know, our judicial system is, you know, human, if you will. Mm-hmm. But they are. And you know what? They have a lot of, you know, everybody has their own like little fetish or this and that, you know, I mean, call it what you will. I think a fetish is probably the wrong word because this is absolutely evil and criminal.
Right.
But, you know, as far as the education, I or your initial question, now that I have a little time to ponder it, I think it is going to be educating. We have to educate on what to look out for and what can we do. But what I know is lacking are the resources that, okay, yes, say you do identify a sex trafficker or somebody that was trafficked. But what do you do? Who's going to take them and you know, house them? Who's going to keep them safe? Who's going to help them rehabilitate? That's what's lacking. And I think it's lacking so much because the government doesn't want to put money toward that because they want this to continue to go on.
Yeah.
Our government is so corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And when people say, you know, people are realizing that now, and that's where you have this grassroots movement to get people on the local boards, right? The local county level. Right. And be like, okay, well, help us because it all starts at the county. You know, I know that somebody was telling me that, and I saw it a few blocks away from my house, not very far away from my house. There was two hotels that were housing a lot of the migrants or, you know, I don't know if you'd call them migrants, essentially. Yeah, I guess you would because we're allowing them to come in. So,
right.
But hotels, buses full of, you know, just illegal citizens. Now, do we call them a citizen? I guess we do because we're allowing them to come in here.
Well, that's the thing. The way that they're able to manipulate these people and get them to do their bidding to become prostitutes or use them for, you know, sex trafficking is because the sponsors are the ones who are supposed to take them to their court hearing. And when they don't show up with them, they get a letter saying, basically, you're here illegally and you have to leave. And the sponsor holds that over their head and says, if you don't do what I'm telling you to, I'm going to call ICE.
Mm-hmm.
So they're totally like they're using the system against them.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about how much money is made. Like right now, we know with the Twitter, how they weren't regulating the pornography. They were just letting all kinds of child pornography on Twitter and all these social media. Like you can get access to porn. Like now it's on Spotify now. Did you know that?
No.
If you put in two commas, then all this this porn comes up in your search. You just put two commas. Yeah. I just found it. Yes. On Spotify. I thought that was just for listening. Like I thought that was just music and podcasts.
I didn't even know that there was images that could be displayed on Spotify. So
video,
this is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hardcore porn.
Wow.
So we have this problem because people, I'm not even going to just call out the men, even though primarily I think it's men, but people have such an addiction right now to porn that mm-hmm. this is what's feeding this new form of slavery. It is slavery, right? We've got people being bought and sold. There's this, I don't know if you've heard about this, but there's this also, it's called snuff porn. Where apparently, I think that it was like the cartel in Mexico or something. But anyway, they're taking children and raping them and then killing them on video.
Oh my God.
And people are consuming this content. So of course you're going to see this spill over into society and why we're seeing this huge market on, you know, here in the United States, this huge market for, and think about it. These are people who are coming over who really don't have an identity, right? Mm-hmm. So no one would even know if they died.
Well, that's a good point you make. One of the organizations that I was talking to, she was trying to get all of the people crossing over the border saliva tests so that we had their DNA.
Mm.
And if they were ever, you know, called 911 or, you know, had to get into the, you know, died. Mm-hmm. Essentially, or were at the hospital, they could look them up and identify that they were brought over the border because, like you said, they just call up and you know that child has a phone number and that they call that number and they're like, yeah, I'm the cousin or whatever, and then they come and they pick them up, but they could give an address, but. If the address is a bad address, there's no way to find them. So now that child's lost in the system and no way to identify it. And right. So they didn't want to do the saliva testing. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
What?
Wow. See, and they weren't injecting them with the vaccine either.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? You say that we have a pandemic going on and you got all these people coming from all over the world through Mexico, but you don't want to inject them. Why are you not injecting them and making the citizens, you know, trying to coerce them into being injected?
Exactly. Exactly. It's too much craziness going on. Like even that, how does that end? Does it end? Does the vaccine program ever end? No. Yeah.
I, you know what? I don't, I honestly, I feel like this is end times and that is how I view the world. And I view it as like doing as much good as possible while I'm here now. But I really feel like, you know, Satan knows that, you know, its time is short. And so I feel like the demonic forces have just been unleashed tremendously over the last few years. And that alone is why we're seeing so much evil now. Like, where is it because we have eyes to see and ears to hear?
Mm-hmm.
Before we didn't recognize that, the vast majority of us. But for me, yeah, it was an immediate, you know, thing in March of 2020 where I was like, this is prophetic. This is prophetic what's happening. And it's only just gotten worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, definitely. And it's scary, but like, how does it end? Does I'm wondering, with the borders open the way that they are, and we're having this infiltration, and I don't know if you know, if you've seen that they've, I think, attacked 108 different power grids within our system so far this year. Like, there, well, not this year, but over the last year, 108 different attacks on different power stations. And then we had just a couple days ago where they had to ground all those planes, like all the planes. Because
My sister was telling me that.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they want to rely so heavily on technology, right? Like, technology is the future. We don't need all these humans anymore because we're going to rely on AI and machines and all this stuff. But like, how easy? I mean, we all know, like, when your phone starts buffering or it's not loading or technology just isn't working, we do robotic surgeries. And there are times when there is a fatal error and the robot is just has to be shut down while it's, you know, docked. You know, it's connected to the patient, holding onto tissue. You know, the patient, it could be anything happening. If it's a fatal error, you have to shut down the whole system and restart it. You've got to get out the tools in order to unlock the instruments to get them out safely. Like, there's so many things that happen, you know, with technology. It doesn't always work. So why on earth are we relying on this crap? Like, it's like they really, truly, I think people worship it like it's a god.
Yeah. They do. Absolutely. They do. I mean, over the weekend, I woke up when I was in Orlando and I grabbed my phone and it was black. And I was like, oh my gosh, why isn't it turning on? Mm-hmm. And then I tried charging it and it wasn't charging. I said, oh my gosh, I don't have my phone numbers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I only know a couple of numbers. What am I going to do? And then I just stayed calm because I thought, whatever, there's a reason for everything. You know, yeah. If I'm meant to have to go or today, I guess I'm going to the store. But then I looked on my laptop and I typed it in, and something happens when iPhone system reboots and you have to push like the volume up, volume down, volume up, and then power on. And then it worked. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh my gosh.
Yes. Like, the panic, right? Because they got us so good because we are really truly slaves to our technology right now. Like, everything we have, like all the information is tied to these accounts. Because I've thought many, many times, I think about it probably every day, how can I get off the system? How can I get off the grid? I'd have to let go of the technology, which means everything, like every password you have, all the emails, all the files, everything is connected to you via this system. And so if you let go of it and start all over, then what?
I mean, then what? Really? It's such a hard concept. I mean, and we're in our 40s, you know, mm-hmm. So we know what it was like prior to, you know, not having all this technology.
Yeah.
What about like our children?
Right.
They have no idea.
Have you ever tried to take the phone away from your son? If he's we did that with my daughter. This was years ago. She's 21 now. So this was back when she was in high school. I mean, we were worried. We thought that she was going to try and kill herself or us. Like, we were like, sleep with the doors locked because she lost her mind. And we thought for sure she was going to come for us because we took her phone. I mean, like, these kids freak out without.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Well, no, my son, he was like that. That was in last January. He had come back from spending like 2 months with about a month with his dad. And he came back and boy, his hormones were raging. He, you know, his sleep schedule was all off and he just had an attitude. And no matter what I did, he just was not listening, you know, like the way my typical punishments. Mm-hmm. And I just, I took his phone away. I took the Xbox away. I was like, you're done. Yeah. And I mean, I just went off. I went off. And then I thought, okay, what do I do? What do I do? And then I thought, you know what? He's raging. He's raging right now. Like, his hormones are all going crazy. You know, it's COVID is all happening. Mm-hmm. What do I do? And then I thought, he needs to work out some of this, you know, energy that he has. And luckily, you know, he loved basketball because I put him into basketball and he just flourished. And I was like, I just got to get him so tired that he doesn't even care about these other things. And that's what happened. He would just be so tired that he would have dinner and relax and then go to bed. And he didn't even question it. And then finally, when he got his phone back, he said to me, he goes, you know what? I actually kind of liked it. I mean, he was 10 at the time. You know, he's had a phone since he was four because his dad got it for him. When he moved to Chicago, he wanted to stay in contact with them. But yeah, I know. It's like crazy.
If there was a way, like there's a resort here in Texas. There's also one in Arizona, Miraval. You know that one?
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful.
Yes. So they have this policy where you can't use a phone, no phones. So it, I mean, there's certain areas you can use your phone, like in your room or pretty much. Yeah, there's pretty much that's it. They don't want you to have your phones. They don't want you to be distracted. They really want you to be present and just enjoying nature. And it's like a health focused resort. It was
super expensive.
Yeah, it's so stupid expensive. Like we went one time and then I look at the prices and I'm like, I want to go so bad because it was so refreshing and rejuvenating. It was everything, but the cost is really prohibitive. But hey, if they're listening, Miraval, hey, we would love to come in and maybe do an event at your resort.
That would be so nice.
Wouldn't it be a health focused, you know, like recharge, rejuvenate, I mean, it's just beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. Anyway,
yeah, I think it's down in Tucson.
In Tucson? Okay. Okay. Here it's in Hill Country. It's kind of close to Austin, but it's a beautiful resort. And anyway, no phones. And I thought it was like amazing. It felt so good to be disconnected and forced because sometimes you do have to force yourself because it has become an addiction. But I would love to, if like the way I see this ending to me, the way I see us getting some power back and some control back, if you know, if we have any time left, is by taking some steps backwards. When it comes to the advancements we've made, we have to acknowledge that not everything we did was good for society, and being able to say, okay, we're going to go back to the days when we had phones that plugged into the wall. And I mean that, I remember that, you know, you sat in the kitchen where the phone was, you could only go so far because it was, you know, you had a cord. And if your parents picked up the phone in another room and listened to your conversation and you didn't know they were on the phone, oh my God. Right. But it was so good. It was so much better. Like I can't do that. Like we had this app on my son's phone, on all the kids' phone, in order to monitor everything that they were doing. And it allows you to, you know, put restrictions and all those things. Well, they figured out how to get around it.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, all right, this is a tool, but it's not working. It's not really working because it's allowing all of the bad in and it's really preventing the good from coming in. So how do we fix it? I'm like, look, I'll go off grid. I say it all the time. I will go off grid, get some chickens, grow a garden.
Well, we just keep saying we're going to have our own compound.
We have to start looking for some land.
Yeah. You know, when I was in Orlando, I met Forest Abundance. Oh, what was it called? I actually did a post on it today. Let me see if I could pull it up. We went to, so there was a group of us, like 70 people that went to this farm, foodforestabundance.com. Mm. And he spoke on permaculture. Mm. Yes. And it's essentially allowing, you know, removing, like anybody could do it. Let me put it this way. He is, you know, saying that, you know, all the grass that we have throughout all the homes in America, just removing some of the ornamental, you know, bushes and stuff and growing food.
Yes.
Because once you start growing, that people were talking about like how all these birds were coming back and, and, you know, butterflies and all of these, you know, creatures that were coming back, and how it self-sustains itself.
Yeah.
Like once you start it, it's kind of self-sustaining, where you, depending on where you're at and, you know, the part of the country. Mm-hmm. But I thought, man, what a concept. Because then he was also talking about like your fences. Mm-hmm. Well, you can grow viney foods. Why aren't we growing foods on our fences instead of just having it be a piece of metal?
Yep. Because I have a grapevine that I'm starting. And what that's such a good, there's a school in our neighborhood, elementary school. And right next to it is this big, huge field. It's just grass. And then right next to that is a park. And every time I walk past it, I think that entire thing could be a community garden for the neighborhood, where we just plant and everyone helps to maintain all of the garden. And then you go and you just pick the food that you need for dinner. And it's right. I mean, there's so many areas like that. And if we were to get rid of the grass and replaced it with food, I mean, nobody has to be hungry. Like, who is regulating this and preventing us from doing this stuff?
Nobody. I mean, we could do it unless it's your HOA.
My HOA, yeah, they won't let us. No, I am allowed to have, like, I think a total of either 10 by 10 foot garden max, or maybe 20 by something small. And so I'm counting up my little planter boxes and raised garden beds and trying to make sure it looks pretty enough that they don't come and say something, because they're so strict. But again, like, we got to start changing the rules. We got to start doing some things different, because if we don't, what's going to happen?
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. I'm right there with you. I tell people too, you know, I mean, look at us on talk radio. Talk radio we're on. Most people are getting their information. Well, I can't say most people, but there has been a huge following for talk radio and podcast. I mean, so that's going back to, you know, 1920s, where people got their information, was listening to it on the radio. And that's essentially what we're doing now. And the people listening to us, thank you for listening to us, by the way.
Right. And I think that's actually a wonderful way to end the show, because we are running out of time. Please, you guys, listen to us Monday through Friday. We are on, and you can hear us on any of the major applications. You can go to America Out Loud Talk Radio and pull up the shows. There are lots of great shows to listen to, not just ours. There's a lot of really good shows to listen to. So if you want to stay in the know and stay up to date on what's going on, and just do everything you can to help us win back our freedom in this country, if it's at all possible. And if not, then, you know, be on the right side when we create this parallel society where we will have a safe place for us to go. In the meantime, just know that we are here for you. Our goal is to shine a light in the darkness.
It's time and then-